paradigm shifters. What do paradigm shifters mean? It means somebody who's making a difference on the collective at this time in human consciousness. There's a big change coming up. 2012, they tell us we're really going to evolve. And there are some people who are dynamically working to help cultivate the art of change and wisdom. And one of those is Dr. Ramona Rubio, whose book, along with Catherine Davidson's book, is called The Alchemical Woman, A Handbook for Everyday Soul Work. And she's going to teach us how to grow with a bit more grace, right, Dr. Rubio?
Well, that's what I'm working on for myself, so I'd love to share it.
I guess that's what we do, eh? Everything you do, you share with the world, really, whether you do it out loud or not, right?
Exactly, energetically or personally.
So now, one of the quotes that's in the book is, everything that happens to you is your teacher. The secret is to learn to sit at the feet of your own life and be taught by it. I love that. So let's talk about this book, The Alchemical Woman. What is alchemistry? What does it all mean, and how can we use this information?
Thank you very much, Veronica, for having me on your show. And it is a huge topic because it's infused with so much antiquity. But to bring it to contemporary times, basically the basic concept, I should say, is changing base metal into gold. That's what we all, anybody that hears of alchemy, that's the first thing that comes to mind. And also that it was a very secretive world, a very dark world that a lot of people were not in tune with. However, how Dr. Davidson and I have worked it, along the lines of Carl Jung, who is the great psychologist, what he saw and what we recognized as well is that this process of alchemy is a metaphor for living a golden life, for living a life of wholeness in tune with nature. And I think that's what the new paradigm is really about. It's an ancient idea that's now recycled into what we are looking at as this new paradigm.
Hmm. Recycled means it's been transformed, right?
Yes. It's been transformed from a time where it was so esoteric, so hidden, because the people that so many of the population just were not aware of what we are aware of now. Maybe, you know, and again, maybe I'm wrong, but that's the feeling I get, is that our consciousness was not expanded to the level that we are now ready for using these ancient formulas in a new way to really enhance not only relationships with each other, but relationships with the planet and cosmos and whatever else that we're able to dialogue with and get that insight about being an alchemically transformed person.
Well, you know, it's interesting, and I really appreciate that. And it's interesting that I've heard lately that the downloads, the universal downloads, the energies from the universe are really what are propelling us to create our own reality, that it hasn't always been that way on a mass level. Not that it's exactly the same, but it's got some of the same mechanics to it. You know,
well, I think
really,
it's all part of the whole, and that's one of the things I love when I study these alchemists. Their main idea was this as above, so below. That's where that comes from. And their whole thrust, how they could be whole inside of themselves in order to express themselves in the outside as totally whole human beings. That's a huge thing to think about, you know, thousands of years ago, that these people, that's what they were searching for even then.
Hmm. All right, so one of the things, you have some amazing terms. This is a wonderful book, everybody. It's called The Alchemical Woman, A Handbook for Everyday Soul Work. But one of the things you've done is you've used some of their older terms, and these terms are to refer to the various stages we go through, like having experience and then having a reaction, having a process time, right? Would you like to talk a little bit about that?
Oh, I'd love to. What we discovered is that in alchemy, they have very specific procedures that they would work. And what we realized is that these were so much in tune with our process of transformation. So, for instance, and I'll just use these terms just as a review point, and then we can go into more detail if you'd like to do that, Veronica.
Mm-hmm.
But in this, that we used five stages that are very much part of the traditions of the ancient alchemists. But the ones that are more familiar are the Negretto, and the Negretto is blackness. That's where loss, death, depression happens, where fear pushes us into this dark cave where we're paralyzed and unable to move. So that's Negretto. And, of course, there's solutions to all of how we work this, but right now I'm just going to introduce the stages.
Mm-hmm.
The second stage is lapis, and that's blueness. And in the blue stage, we are in the throes of transformation, transitions in baptism, where we're washing the confusion away from our mind, where chaos starts to settle in. We're in the throes of emotion, and that's this part that then shifts into the next stage, and that is albedo. And a lot of the people that study alchemy are familiar with the albedo, in that that is the light of day. That's whiteness. That's where the clarity comes in, where perfection of our purpose, revelations come in, insights, purity, ascension. You know, you're in that realm of the divine. And don't we all love to be there? We think we've arrived, but unfortunately we don't stay there because it's, you know, that's the realm of angels, and I don't know any human being that can fly and be associated with angels or take on the role of an angel. That's not our purpose. The next step or the next stage is trinitas, and that's yellowness. That's the juiciness of life. That's where relationships of all orders happen. That's where sex and copulation and babies and dirty diapers. This is the stuff of everyday life. And that's, you can see, I mean, if you stay too long in the albedo, there's a tendency to lose out of this other part that is the juiciness of life. And I just, you know, to me, it's got to be all those stages. But let me finish with the last stage is the, just like the prize, if you will, and that's called the rubedo. And that's the redness of life. That is where we are fully in tune with who we are in the inside, matches with who we are on the outside. And there's no deception. There is this clarity of purpose, and we're living a fulfilled life. And again, we can't stay there either too long, because then we lose connection with our humanity. So there's this beautiful...
What do you mean, as the collective, or is just our own personal journey?
I would say, again, we work on this as an individual, but we also work on this as a collective, as a culture. And as an example, right now in Western culture, with the banks failing, the housing market, the finances, the gas, I mean, it's obvious that we're in the throes of the Negretto. Many people are suffering. They're in that cave. They're paralyzed because of fear that says this horrific thing is going on. But yet, there are so many other beautiful things going on. So basically, Veronica, what's important to know is that though these are very specific stages, they're not a step-by-step, this is what happens now, and then next week, this is what happens next. We integrate all these stages at once. They're all part of our human experience. However, there are certain stages that are much more activated in our life at a certain time than others, depending on what our life challenges are, what the insights that we need to gain, and the life lessons that we are in the midst of learning.
So you could actually run these stages like mini-wise all through the day. I mean, you can have all of those experiences and then yet have them in like a life frame in longer periods. The same, you see what I'm saying, is that...
Absolutely, mini to macro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so we can be running them all the time and be in various forms of various phases of each at different levels of our existence, right?
Yes. Just as a quick example, I had some friends come over, and I was very excited about an idea I had on how to further alchemy into the university structure as far as students and all, and having them use this as a dynamic way of transformation. And I was really excited. They came over, and I was talking a mile a minute. Oh, my gosh. I could hardly contain myself with all this information that was flooding me. And so I was in a state of libido where it just felt so fulfilling. And I didn't get the response. It was almost too much information. And when they left, I pondered. I thought, well, what did something go wrong or what happened? But I still felt that I had given the message out and that it was okay. However they took it was fine. So I felt, very complete, and life went on. And about, half an hour later, I felt my energy oozing out of me, that intensity that I'd had. It was like I was so porous, it was leaking out, and I couldn't stop it. And within a matter of an hour, I was in such a funk. I was feeling depressed and thinking, what's going on here? Why am I feeling this way? And the message that came to me, I mean, I definitely was thrown into the negretto, but I got the message that it was too much information that wasn't ready to go out yet, and so I had to be curtailed. It was like the universal information had to be put a stop on me, and it was like, oh my goodness, I overdid it, and now I had to reconfigure myself or rethink what it was, what my underlying purpose was.
So you go into negretto, and then you move to blue. Did you go through all those phases?
No, actually, I went into albedo.
Oh, you did?
Yes, I did, because that clarity, and this is the beautiful thing about, who wants to be in the throes of a cave in the negretto? But that's where we get our wonderful epiphanies, where we get to learn some really deep stuff if we stay there long enough and don't run away.
Mm-hmm.
So I stayed there, because, and it was very uncomfortable. I mean, I would rather be in that rubido, just excited and full of this energy. But I didn't, because I'm human, and stuff happens to humans, like it or not. and ugly stuff happens. And so when I realized what that insight gave me, I thought, right, it was like it lifted me out of there. And I didn't have to go into transition. I went into the state of albedo because I had clarity and I had a purity of purpose. And I understood that it wasn't the message that I gave. It was my bottom line intention. I was trying to manipulate and control this exciting idea into what I thought was the right way. And that's the other thing, is that when we are in the rubido and we do get these lofty, beautiful insights on how to live life, that if we're out of alignment with what that needs to be, then these other stages come in to help us, I believe, to help us to live a more integrated life, a life that's based on truths and purpose and integrity and not on so much ego-based.
So would you say it's the ego thing, or do you think it's just not checking out your receivers?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both, because ego is a filtering system it's a filtering system that's it's who we are, but it filters out the messages that give us clarity. And so it sort of gets muddied. And we act from the ego point of view and not from our higher self point of view.
So the ego is kind of a determined, I'm going to get this done my way now?
Well, of course, because ego is about the I. It's about me and what's in it for me. And when we work with ego to integrate it, because I'm a true believer, we don't get rid of ego. We learn to dance with the ego so that it dances a much more healthier dance with us and not one that's destructive.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's this process of tuning in to what the real purpose, that underlying purpose was, the motivation for that connection with these people that came to visit. I didn't give them a lot of space for them to discuss what I was saying, it was like I took over.
Hmm.
And I saw that later on. I'm going, oh, my goodness. That's the drawing board on that one.
Did you get another chance?
They're coming back.
Good. When's that?
Yeah. And I'm going to be a very good steward of the information.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, we could go in several directions, but one I think I'd like you to have, first of all, who are you? What is a cultural mythologist? What a wonderful, wonderful term that you are. What a wonderful heading.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Well, I would tell my very intimate friends that it's an overeducated storyteller.
Great.
But in a more, everyday kind of way, a cultural mythologist, and I went to Pacifica Graduate Institute, and I don't know how many people of you, how many listeners know where that is, but it's in Santa Barbara, and it's where Joseph Campbell's archives are. Beautiful setting, wonderful environment, and just yummy learning there. And one of the courses that they, or areas of study, is mythology. And so I took me almost 5 years, but I eventually got my doctorate in mythology. And as a cultural mythologist, we really look at what story has to do and how story informs the soul of people and of culture. So from the very oldest to even current times, and we're in the midst of creating, with this new paradigm idea, we are in the midst of creating a new mythology, a new story for humanity and how that will unfold. And we'll have our heroes and heroines, we'll have our gods and goddesses that are, you know, whatever form and shape they will take. And that's the beautiful thing of being a cultural mythologist, is that we get to look at how it's been in the past and how it informed the soul story of those cultures, and now what is being retold or revisioned or written anew on what we have as a potential of what this new paradigm is informing us, this cosmic impulse that we've talked about before, that is informing itself and what it wants the story to be.
So what do you think that's going to look like?
I'm not a psychic, but I suppose what I'm hoping for is a world where we know, like the ancient alchemists knew, that we were all one. And what I mean by that is that when I speak to you, Veronica, I am you.
Mm.
And when you speak to me, you are me. And somewhere in that connection is our collective soul story. And how that unfolds would be in collaboration. It would be in thinking that if it's good for me, it's good for you, and vice versa. If it's bad for you, it's bad for me. Where there's where competition, where war, all of those are just things that once were a way of being, but now, as this unfolds, is not essential. It's not a necessary way where humanity gets to act. We don't have to be in that field anymore. That's my, maybe that's,
well, that sounds pretty wonderful.
But for me, if you can't think of it as wonderful, if you can't imagine it that way, then it'll never even introduce itself. And I'm not saying that we are not going to have challenges in our life, because we are human. What I'm saying is, let's decrease the challenges through eliminating competition and war. Those two right there, competition is, I'm better than you, or I know more than you, or I deserve more than you. And saying, I am as you, we express differently, and we are all worthy of the best that this planet and this experience gives us. I don't want more than you. I don't want less than you. I want whatever has my name on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, more than that, I think we can do a win-win. And the more people know, according to this book as well, the more people know who they are, the more empowered they are. And that isn't a competitive experience, is it?
No, it's not, because I think this, but the exciting news for me as I was going through determining in this state of rubido, what is my life purpose? And this really strong voice came to me that said, be yourself. And of course, when you hear something like that, that we've heard, you know, so how often have we heard it in our lifetime?
Yeah, really, a few times.
And so it was like, oh, please, here I have this great big epiphany, and what does it say? Be myself. But then I started to think, how can I be myself in my life's purpose? What does that look like for me? And what it looks like is that I can be genuine, I can be nurturing to myself and others, I can live a life of integrity, and one that has that underneath my motivation is not for me to be on top, but for me to be along with everyone else. And so if I can be myself with those thoughts, then I know that there lies my greatness. And not greatness by defining that I'll be, you know, the next Hispanic or the new Hispanic president of the United States, but one that can just be whatever I choose or life chooses for me and be fully present and thankful that I'm having that experience.
Yeah, I love that.
Mm-hmm. That is huge.
That is huge, isn't it? Did it take you a while? Did you have to go through all these phases to find that?
Yes, because the old paradigm, and you know, again, this is something that's coming for me. The old paradigm is what, like, the secret says, that you have to have goals, intentions, you know, all these things that tell you that if you intend it, it'll be. If you wish it, it'll happen. If you want it and desire it, it'll be. I lived my life that way. I went back to school as a mature woman, and in 1995, I said by the year 2000, I was going to have my doctorate. And I did.
Wow.
And that was wonderful.
What kind of work had you done before?
I had been an interior designer for 18 years, and so
interesting.
And it was a corporate business. I did a lot of high rises and offices, so I was in the business world. And then I had lots of reincarnations. I ended up with a job in law enforcement in order to not only support school but support my mother and father who were elderly. So there's a lot of life choices I had to make. But I made the best of it. For 11 years, I worked in law enforcement. So these were issues that while I was in law enforcement, as when I took care of my mother and my father, I went to school full-time, and I also worked. So this was huge. I mean, talk about a person's life filled with, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I have to do the other. But when that finished, this whole new alchemical journey of this woman processed into, I'm going to release the having to understand and be in control of what I want, to let it unfold for me as to where I need to be to do the kind of work that needs me.
Is that the intention?
Pardon me?
Is that your intention?
As much of an intention as I can have. I'm so not committed to anything right now that it's kind of scary. Because we are taught that we should have a purpose. We should have a set of goals, a two-year plan, a five-year plan, a 10-year plan. You know, we plan our lives away and forget to live in the moment. So I'm living in this moment of just being very present with what my gifts are. And I'm not sure what I'm going to do next year. It's a beautiful, very... what can I say? It's freeing, because I've never lived in this kind of an arena before. I've planned my life. I knew when my children were going to be born. I had everything lined up, and now nothing is, and it's okay.
Well, it's wonderful, isn't it?
It's kind of inspiring,
darling. So you and Catherine Davidson, Dr. Davidson, co-wrote this book. This is a wonderful book, isn't it? Like, it's really inspiring for people to be able to work their way through these various phases and write in it and so on. And it is intentional in the sense of, what, bringing the gold out of one's inner journeying rather than having a goal or intention on the external, right?
Yes, that's right, because I think that what the alchemists were trying to do is they... purified and were able to distill any of those impurities. I'm sure they didn't have the benefit of what ego is or you know, the bigger self, all that. They had other images and ideas that were very strong with them, but they were doing the same thing we're doing now, and that is to get the clarity of who they were in the inside to match with what they are on the outside. And so what happens, I think, for myself anyway, is that as I'm working through these formulas, that the clarity and the purity is coming, it's being distilled, and as the, I can't remember who it was, said stinking thinking starts to ease up, that there is this knowing that I'm living in that present moment, and I don't have to outguess God. You know, I can just, or the gods or goddesses or the divine, that I can just be very present and surrender to this golden woman within that I feel already has the answers, and they just need to be, one, listened to and then acted upon as they come up on a daily basis.
Well, and that's wonderful. Tell me this, did you always feel, or did you, when did you first feel the pull between wanting to get the inside to the outside, you know?
Well, I'd say, it's been years. I had an idea a long time ago. In fact, I wanted to write a book called Up Your Ego. And this idea was that I knew that I had a very strong identity. When I was born, my mother died, and there was a lot of tragedy that happened in my life. But there was always this, I'm a winner kind of mantra that surrounded me. And I think it was a way for me to survive all the difficulties in my lifetime, in my young years.
Do you think that was just an innate thing, or astrological, or cellular?
Well, I think it was really cellular, that was something so inherently part of who Ramona was that helped me to survive.
You know, it's a gift.
Pardon me?
It's a real gift.
Well, I look at it that way now, but I think at that point, yes, I did. I really felt that I was able to, it was definitely my friend. But as I matured and as life changed for me and I didn't have those challenges, then I had to make adjustments there because the inside and the outside were not, they weren't matching. And I heard you on your your show before talking about that, you know, that what was going on inside of you was so much more expansive than what was going on outside. So there was a cover-up. And I think that's what I realized, is that this inner journey that I was on was not matching up to my defense and having to use the ego and all these other things to really express myself. So it was like obsolete, like we were talking about war and competition. This type of competition that I had, that I needed to be on top, and it wasn't serving me anymore. And so that's when this, I have to up my ego and get it in alignment with what was happening inside of me, that there was this knowing that there was something more to life, that I didn't have to play that role anymore. I sort of could step outside of myself and be objective, that whatever those coping mechanisms weren't necessary. So I had to somehow revision them into the new Ramona that was becoming.
Now, do you think, Ramona, this is sort of an interesting question to me. Do you think we have to go through so many years before that reality hits?
I hope not. For the sake of our younger generations, I hope that they're speeding up and not having to wait till they're in their mid-60s like me.
Well, I just, you know, I was thinking about how there is a speed-up going on in the whole universe and Earth situation. Right, we're all vibrationally a lot faster than we were. So I'm just wondering if collectively that's changing too. I just think it's pretty interesting that a lot of us had to do a number of years of being before we could break free.
Well, what I'm hoping for, Veronica, is that there's this portal of possibilities for the younger generations that they can step through and have the gift that we can laid the groundwork for.
Have they been able to perceive that?
Pardon me?
Have they been able to hear our ground breaking, the cracks of the ground as we go through?
The younger generations?
Yeah.
Well, this is why I was so excited to meet with these younger people. They're in their, probably their 20s. That's why I was so excited to meet with them, to talk alchemy with them, to
mm-hmm.
see how we could come up with a way of introducing this system, that these stages and learning and understanding what a beautiful process this is in fully work into our human experience. So I'm just going to trust that whatever it is that is coming through each one of us that are on this journey of transformation, that it will go out to those, the young ones that are definitely ready, that are getting it, and that just need mentors like ourselves that have gone through the road of hard knocks, or however they say that,
mm-hmm.
so that, you know, we know what we're talking about. I know what I talk about, pain and suffering and loss, and I know about the insights and the, you know, and the our guides and our angels and our, the invisible friends that we, many of us have. And so it's just putting it all together and giving it as a gift to the younger generation in a loving way, not in a forceful way. But
yeah, not an authority so much.
No, not. I absolutely cross that. I'm no authority. I'm no expert. I'm just barely learning how to be a pseudo-expert in my own life. But I am a loving person that believes in the younger generation and their potential.
Well, now, do you have girl children?
I have one daughter and I have one son.
Okay, so how are they doing with this mythological understanding? Are they picking up speed? That's usually a good place to notice how it's coming along.
Yes, they are. My daughter more than my son right now. My daughter is an intuitive and she's psychic.
Mm.
And so she and I have wonderful conversations. She sees, she understands, and she's had these gifts from very little. And they were kind of scary. I think I heard you say that.
Mm-hmm.
They were kind of scary for her when she realized that she had these gifts. But I was able to, because I've, you know, obviously I love my children very much, I was able to just hold that energy for her until she was able to fully grow into it and just be her support system. And now she is a healer and is absolutely a charming person that radiates this kind of joy and love. So I'm very excited that, you know, she is reaching her potential and being herself, and that's exciting. And my son is going through more of the daily crises of divorce and being a loving father, but he also, we talk in the same level, and he understands that he's changing his myth, the myth of what it is to be a married man and now being a single father and taking on a role of not only a father but also nurturing, loving, almost the mother figure as well. It's a combination.
Well, it's sort of interesting because it sounds like the children. I just would really like to think that the kids these days, the young people, can move swiftly with some of this and really get the freedom of who they are at a young age. And it seems like your children are. They're not children anymore. They're in their 30s?
No, yes. Yes, they are. And I think, yes, they had the benefit of my learning, of my stumbling and still stumbling. And the beautiful part is that when we accept that stumbling is okay, that we are human, we're making errors, we're making great decisions, but it's not about beating ourselves up. It's about learning and growing through and forgiving ourselves if it's necessary to forgive ourselves. I mean, sometimes it's not necessary. Sometimes it's just accepting that that is what we do when we are in this experience and not mm-hmm. having. We're not angels. We're not gods and goddesses. We're human beings.
And we're here for a creative expression of who we are.
Absolutely.
Which is sometimes,
yeah.
I like thinking that because it gives you more leeway to have trial and error all over the place, right?
Yeah.
So do you think collectively on the planet, do you think humans, as a species, we go through these phases as well?
As far as?
For example, Negredo. Do you think the human human collective literally goes through these periods as well? Like the Dark Ages.
Right. Well, I think that overall, and as I talked earlier, that cultures have certain modalities, certain stages that are predominant, just like humans, so, or just like the individual. So I would think, and I'm going to even stretch it further, and I don't even know if I'm right, but I'll just put it out there. And of course, what is being right anyway? I'm thinking that we are...
a temporary state of affairs.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think anybody really knows anything except that we are, you know, that I am. But what I'm thinking is, since you put it out there, I'm going to see where this goes, that there is this, the individual, there is the relationship with others, there are the it's the cultural, and then it's the global, then it's the cosmic. And I'm thinking that in all these levels and layers of life expressions, that there's got to be these stages that are informing us. And so we do, I'm thinking of the dark matter, and I'm thinking about the building of the stars and what all this means. I mean, we can't hardly grasp the immensity of what this all is. But what if we are just all repeating these same ways of expressing life through different stages of our evolvement? So why not, Veronica? Why wouldn't it be from the very, you know, like the very micro wavelength and particle to the very macro of universe building and star formations?
Well, that sure makes sense, doesn't it? Yeah. So we're talking about kind of moving cycles,
yeah.
Really. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like that. Spirals.
Exactly. And this just came, I have no idea. But it's a wonderful thought to contemplate and meditate on, to see if indeed there is something there that gives us this dimensionality of possibilities.
I like that a lot. Now, can you give people at home some, thumbnail, some way of using this information, perhaps give them a little more information about the phases and how they can recognize them in themselves and move through them?
Absolutely. I think that one of the things that's really important is to know that if you are experiencing, the stage of Citronitas, we know that if you're a young family and you have children, you are definitely a lot of the time in Citronitas. You're dealing with bottle feeding. You're dealing with children that are throwing fits at the supermarket. You're dealing with the relationship between you and your husband when you want to have a decent night's sleep and baby's crying. That's really obvious for young listeners that is the stage of Citronitas that is overpowering what is happening in your life. However, there are also relationship issues where the husband can come home and say, you know, I don't know if I'm going to get that promotion. I think someone else is going to get it. So there is a certain doubt of that they're not good enough, and that can throw them into the state of negretto. And so it's listening to what is happening to the individual, that as people become more in tune as to how these stages work in their lives, then there are keystones that help them work through them, at least one, to be aware, and two, to know what kind of actions they can take to either ease up or understand their partners, ease up on their partners or understand what stage they're in. And, of course,
and know it's going to move. That's the thing that's wonderful, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, the good news is that we are always in these stages of the alchemical stages, and the bad news is that we're always in these stages of alchemy. I mean, it's the same thing. That's the good and the bad news. But I think for the listener, what is important to know is that as we mature, and hopefully we can speed this up, but as we mature, we're able to get more tools for dealing with these stages that challenge us, because we get to have the life experiences that inform us how to be able to move out of them when the right time is. Not to force life, but to work with life as it unfolds for us.
Hmm. So if you're in the dark, if you're in the dark one, for example, say you have little children. We'll go back from this family who's got little children, and they have some bleak situation come up, and maybe somebody dies. You know, what would you do? What would you recommend? I know that you're also a coach, but you're a nurturer, aren't you? Life
I'm nurturer. I'm a life nurturer, and I think that speaks volumes in nurturing. I think one is to be very real in the experience. And by that I mean face it, don't deny it. Accept it and claim it, don't blame. Stay with it and don't get outside of it by blaming or running away. And what we do, I mean, children, I know in a personal note with the divorce that my son has just gone through and the children, it's reinforcing the love for my grandbabies and saying, you know, grandma loves you, and there are things that are happening, and it's, you know, assuring them that they're okay, that life happens, and that this isn't something that we deny at all, but we just talk about it. You know, how do they feel? What is it that they're, as little as they are, they're getting some kind of an insight, and it's nurturing them in that they are fully okay in whatever they're, if they're feeling like they've got to scream or whatever, it's okay. And it's an understanding, it's a nurturing of difficulties as well as the rewards that come from when things are working okay. But it's about facing, again, I think is when we face the demon and name what it is, then it has a way of dissipating that scary, fearful place of that it's bigger than what it needs to be.
Mm-hmm. Do you find, let's see, can you teach, like you're talking about the children, your grandbabies and divorce and so on, do you find that we could install or instill an awareness of these cycles at a very young age and really help people grow into their life with more grace, probably?
I don't know for sure. I'm not a child psychologist, but I do sense that as my life experience with my own grandchildren, and they're 3 and 4, so I mean they're very little, but they know that something, energetically, they know something is amiss. I mean, let's face it, they're living in 2 places now. They're not living in one home. Mm-hmm. They don't have that security. And so what I see is that I hear them saying that they're creating little pockets that when they come to visit, and they say, well, this is your house. Well, no, this is your house. Well, let's make it our house. And the two little boys are creating something for themselves. And so when I hear that, I go in and I play with them, and I say, can I visit your house? Oh, yeah. And then I'll say, aren't you lucky? You have your house, you have mommy's house, daddy's house, you have grandma's house. How lucky are you? And there's this, like, wow, look at all the houses I have. You know, and so it's shifting this about putting such a negative spin and looking at how can I, as a grandmother, nurture these children to have an understanding that is more expansive than just, well, you know, this is split and this is, you know, what do they know, the divorce? We don't have to go into details with these young ones, but we can go into a nurturance that they can comprehend that there is a shift, there is a change, not deny that, but not to dwell on it, that it becomes such a monster.
Well, instead of a really sharp edge of an end, it becomes a flow into another way of being. It's a flow rather than a cut, right?
Exactly, yes.
Yeah.
Much more gentle. And that's, as I said, that's what I'm experiencing in my personal life. And I would hope that your listeners, that they get that if this ever-flowing experience in all these stages, that it isn't about right or wrong or good or bad. It's just about the challenges come and great things come, and as long as we don't let the ego govern them in a negative way, but that we listen to say, you know, what is in it for all of us? How can we negotiate to make it the best of this situation?
Yeah, where there's a learning curve here. What is it? Let's find out. Yeah.
It's huge, and there are no simple answers, and I can't give anybody a step-by-step thing. Well, if you follow this and go to the next step and then do this other, that you're going to reach enlightenment and nirvana. I have no clue as to what the steps are for each individual. I can tell you what my steps are, but I do know for sure that life gives us these wonderful stages and possibilities of experiencing life in the fullest. And I always like to say, and it's nourishing for me, that when I'm in the throes of the Negretto, that I know this will pass, because mm-hmm. I've seen it already, that it's, that I've gotten out of it. And that the sooner I'm willing to be very present in what wants my attention, that as soon as I pay attention and I listen to what that gift is of knowing what I have to learn, then I can move out of it. But not until I get that message should I move out of it, because if I move out too soon, I'll be back in it much quicker than if I had let it teach me what it wanted to teach me.
Well, you know, if people, you do sessions with people as well, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, so if people wanted to get hold of you, how would they do that?
They can go onto our website, and that is thealchemicalwoman.com, and there is contact information there, and they can reach us, and we'd love to be able to help either through relationships and couples, or if it's a one-to-one session, or you know, whatever the necessity is.
I love it. It's real help with transitions to get the gold from your experience. When was the Philosopher's Stone? Was that like all of that? Was that during the Renaissance period? I don't remember now.
Actually, we based this book on sort of our icon is Maria Hebrea, and she was an ancient alchemist around the time of 200 A.D. in Alexandria, Egypt.
Okay.
And what's so amazing, and I know in your website you talk about Lemuria and the Atlantis, and Plato talks about the possibility that the ancient alchemists came from Atlantis,
mm-hmm,
that they brought the system into current culture. There's no proof this is a mythology, there's no proof, but they can't pinpoint where this originated.
Mm-hmm.
There's no starting point. It permeated the Eastern cultures, the Arab cultures, the Western cultures, and the Chinese, I mean, the Middle East and East, as well as the Western cultures. It permeated all cultures, and their basic tenets were very similar.
Hmm.
You wonder,
I love
how
it.
Did this get diffused like that?
Mm-hmm.
In that it the tarot card comes from that. Carl Jung, when he used synchronicity, we all know the word now, synchronicity.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that comes from delving into alchemy.
Hmm.
And so much of his work, Carl Jung's work in depth psychology, comes from his interest in reading and translating the ancient manuscripts in these old traditions. The Freemasons alchemy is embedded in that, the Kabbalah,
mm-hmm.
The Rosicrucians, the tarot cards come from alchemy.
That's wonderful. And, of course, we bandied the term around. Of course, isn't this Rumpelstiltskin, remember him?
Yes.
Just to end on a light note, we'll have to go right now. This show is, they'll pull us off stage with a golden hook, I think. But I really appreciate talking to you, and I look forward to our next chat. And this is recommended is to work with The Alchemical Woman, a handbook for everyday soul work, and talk to Dr. Ramona Rubio. Thank you so much. What a delightful chat.
Golden blessings to you, Veronica. Thank you so much.
And you too. So this is Veronica Entwistle, and that was our paradigm shifter for this week, and I'm just really enjoying it. And I will be on Thursday night with Jackie Salvitti again with ET Healing. Talk about more alchemy. It's bringing in light and magic for our healing. And I'm not sure what her subject is this week, but tune in at 8 o'clock on BBS Radio Thursday night, and I'll be her sidekick as she gives another lesson on ET Healing. And I'll see you back at Radiance by Design Tuesday, and I don't know who our paradigm shifter is, Tuesday at 5 o'clock. Radiance is on at 4 o'clock. And I want to say thank you so much for listening. Email me if you have suggestions, comments, or anything, Veronica at Veronica. Veronica Entwistle, no H in Entwistle, Veronica at VeronicaEntwistle.com, or call me at 510-595-5564, 510-595-5564, and I want to send out my love and many blessings as we all go through this wonderful time of shift. I know so many of your souls and journey for, well, the alchemy of who you are that you're sharing with the planet at this time. Much love and good night.